This is a very, very important meeting, and I'm honored to be invited to try to share with people who have the courage to stand up for what's right. I think everybody who came here tonight, all the unions that have taken stands when it wasn't popular to take stands, and the ones now that are able to push some of their members and executive boards and officers to take the stands, that you represent the front line of a united front that needs to be built in this country to stop the war, not just this war, but all the other covert wars that have been going on throughout Africa, throughout Asia, throughout Latin America, to overthrow other people's democratically elected countries, to steal their resources and to impoverish their people and enslave their people. Those are the wars that they don't talk about in the papers on a regular day, or they talk about them in a manner that people don't understand that wars are being waged against people. Also, the wars that are being waged right here in Chicago and the Harlems throughout the entire United States, the El Barrios throughout the entire United States, the Asian communities, the poor Asian communities throughout the whole United States, the Native American people who are in concentration camps in their own land. Those are wars against people and people of color and working people. What you described about the Vietnam War and the brothers and sisters who had to fight in the war, both on both sides, were entrapped in an imperialist, and I find it's very interesting that we talk about a theater. When people are being murdered, slaughtered, killed, their lands are being devastated, it's not a theater. It's not an act. It's not entertainment. It's, to me, imperialism, and people talk about globalism, I don't understand that, because we're still in the era of imperialism. We're still in the era that feels that you can take over people's lands for multi-corporations, that you can still take over people's lands because of imperialism, because of the imperialists who want not to get a little bit of profit, but to get the maximum profit that they can squeeze out of every living cell, every living person, every nation, and they can violate people's national sovereignty. They can violate people's right to self-determination. They can say, I don't like who's leading you for whatever reason, and therefore I have the right to wage and organize a campaign and discredit that person and do everything in my power to try to overthrow you. That's the kind of country and the leadership that we live in. But that's not who everybody is in this country. And so this is a beginning point of people beginning to say, you do not speak for me. Your policies do not represent my interests. You will not send my children overseas to fight and kill other working people. You will not do that in my name. But if we do not organize, it is not enough to sit in forums and talk to each other who are already convinced. If we do not go and talk in our unions to every single person that we can talk to our neighbors, to talk to our relatives, to talk about the importance of speaking out and not allowing people to silence us or act like we do not exist or that there's something wrong with us. And my union in ASME, we had a convention in June. And in June, they tried to terrorize the people who wanted to stand up and speak up against the war. They voted down our resolutions. They tried to isolate us. But people were brave enough to come together and say, no, we are going to form a caucus and we're going to continue to fight. So in December, 6 months later, we were able to get a resolution passed on the Executive Council, the International Executive Council. I'm very proud to be part of NICLAW, and Michael Letwin is sitting here, who is a casualty of taking a very courageous and consistent stand against the war and against Zionism and against racism and against the racist detention of brothers and sisters because they have a different religion or look a certain way. He took a stand, and he lost his office and his union. But I'm very proud to be part of an organization called NICLAW, the New York City Labor Against the War, that was formed in New York City shortly after 9/11. And that took a lot of nerve for people to do that. But the people that were in the room said, the things that are worth fighting for, it always takes a lot of nerve. The things that are worth talking about and standing up for always take maybe a few people that say, you can take the shackles off of my ankles and my arms and the bandage off my mouth because I am going to speak up regardless of the sacrifice. Michael Letwin did that. Ray LaForest, who's a staff organizer in my union, did that. Larry Adams, who also was a casualty and lost his election in the mail handlers, he did that, and I did that. And all the people who came together, who gathered signatures, and several other unions, the CUNY union, who just try to talk about, in an academic setting, you're supposed to be able to talk about ideas. They try to talk about the idea of war, and they got attacked. But they continued to organize. They formed a group inside. They got a resolution eventually passed. That's the work that we have to continue to do. It only happens by giving people the sense that you have the right to stand up, that you have an opinion. 85% of the African Americans, based on a poll, real clear that they're not going to fight this war for anybody. And my union, we represent mainly people of color. My executive board is made up of all people of color. And when I came to bring the NICLAW statement to them, I didn't even have to debate. They said, my son is not going there. My uncle ain't going there. My husband's not going there. Give me this paper and let me sign it. And they took it around and got it signed. We formed a NICLAW committee. And people want to know why was it easy to do that? It was easy because I think over the years, African-American people and people of color began to clearly understand that wars are not in their interest. A lot of people talk about the anti-war movement in Vietnam as if black folks didn't have nothing to do with it, didn't understand it, and were standing on the sidelines trying to figure out what was going on. That's not my understanding of the anti-war movement. I'm old enough to remember it. My understanding, there were some brothers and sisters in the war that were dealing with their superiors inside the war, over in Vietnam. And they were not clueless, and they did not understand it. So that, to me, that's an element that we have to deal with in this anti-war movement. There's an element of racism that we have to deal with in the movement about assuming that people of color don't have the capacity to understand what's in their interest. Or some of the chauvinism that goes on in terms of people's attitude toward workers. Workers aren't bright enough to understand about the war. If we are really some people claim to be leadership, if you really are in leadership, then you should not have contempt for the people that you think you're going to lead. And some of the way anti-war movements and the globalization movement and some environmental movements are organized, they're organized from a premise that the petty bourgeois white leadership thinks that they know better than the people that they're supposed to be organizing. That's something that we need to guard against, fight against, and root it out. We also need to understand what the labor movement to me is not just white men who are in leadership of unions. The labor movement is all workers, whether they're organized or not organized, whether they're on unemployment lines or they're getting welfare and food stamps and Medicaid. Because the majority of the people, as I'm quite sure everybody in this room probably already has this view, are people who create the wealth in this country. There's none of us, all of us sitting here are clothed. And we didn't get this clothing by magic. It didn't drop down from the sky. Somebody was making the clothing. All of us ate something today. Somebody was producing that food, processing it, and getting it to us so that we could eat. The truckers getting the food to us. The people picking the fruit for us. So we need to broaden that perspective that we are not an isolated interest group. We're not a lobbyist interest group in the minority of the society. We are the society. The society is supposed to be about us, and the policies of the government is supposed to be about us. But it ain't going to be unless we change in people's minds. And that's part of the psychological warfare that we have to wage in terms of understanding that we, as I used to always look and say, how could people go into the plantations with the slaves, and there's all these slaves there, they're like hacking things away in the cane fields and the cotton, and then there's this one white man on a horse. How does he get control over them? Or how do you go into a workplace and you talk about organizing workers And there's all these workers there, and there's one manager, and everybody's terrified. The only way they can do that is because of the psychological warfare to condition people that they are in the minority, that they do not have any power, that what they're fighting for is really not something that they have the right to fight for. And that's the same thing in connection to this war. This war is not in the interest of working people. And most wars are not of aggression. Most wars have taken over people's lands and resources. It has nothing to do with the majority of the people in the world. It's not in their interest. When 9/11 occurred, I had just come back from South Africa, and the anger that I saw and heard from people in terms of all the treacherous things, that the cookie crumbs came right back to the White House, right back to the imperialists here in this country. The anger, I was not even, when I looked up on the screen I was at the airport trying to get home, and I saw the building falling down, and I worked like four blocks from that building. It was frightening to look at the building falling down, but somebody was sitting next to me from Africa. They said, I know you're not surprised, because the question is, why didn't it happen before? Why didn't it happen a long time ago? Because we have been privileged not to have a war in this land. We've never had a world war. Our lands have never been destroyed like that. We've never had to suffer like most of the people have had to suffer in this world. We reap the benefits and the privileges from people trying to figure out where they're going to dig food out of the ground to be able to eat, because there is no food. They might be eating dirt. Where they're going to have clothing. We're sitting here benefiting from that. So we have a great responsibility to turn this shit around. And that 9/11 was a wake-up call. It made us part of the rest of the world. It made us understand what you look at on TV and think it's theater and entertainment. Other people live that shit every day. And you get so upset about two buildings and people's lives. Why aren't you upset about people starving? I spoke in Staten Island, and that is a kind of reactionary borough in New York City, at a working class community, and somebody accused me of being out of touch because I was more concerned about some kid not being able to drink milk than I was about the people who lost their lives in the building. I was very concerned about the people that lost their lives in the building, and I'm equally as concerned about some kid not being able to have milk, because in Jamaica, they're making them throw milk away. They're giving them tainted chickens, and they're trying to totally control their economy there. And I'm very concerned about that. But you need to understand, the chickens came home to roost on 9/11. That's what happened on 9/11, that you cannot continue to abuse other people and uphold policies, or act like you don't know the policies exist, or you don't know their effect, and think that it's not going to come back to haunt you. You cannot do that. And that's what 9/11 said. Wake up, folks. You are part of the rest of the world, and you're also part of the problem, not the solution. And if we want to have a world where everybody lives without fear, where nobody has to worry about losing life the way they lost life in 9/11 or the way they're losing another country, that means that we have a tremendous task. We need to leave this room tonight and tomorrow when we come together with a plan that can be implemented, not rhetoric, not selling newspapers, not just going around trying to pretend that you are more revolutionary than the person sitting next to you. Because if you don't have a base and you don't have anybody to talk to, you are irrelevant to me. Because you cannot affect any change. You have to be able to convince other people, because they have respect for you, because they see you doing daily work to be able to organize and try to correct this kind of situation that people live in. And that's what we have to do when we leave here. Each of us have to be an organizer. Each of us have to be able to talk. If you can't talk to your relatives about your politics are irrelevant. If you cannot talk to your neighbor about your politics are irrelevant. If you cannot talk to your coworker about your politics, they ain't worth having. Because if your politics are legitimate and they're about affecting change, then they'll be legitimate to the people that you're talking to. So I just hope that when we leave here, we don't leave here just feeling good because we are against the war. I feel that we should leave here understanding we have a tremendous task and that we're capable of carrying it out. Thank you.